right. Here we go on a Sunday morning. Out of line, Fox Sports Radio, 98.9 FM, 1340 AM. We come your way at this time every Sunday. It is 8 to 9 AM Pacific time. And we're rolling, man, coming off of a Golden Knights victory and a clinching of the Pacific Division in the National Hockey League. We're going to talk about that. And hey, I'm Brian Feldman. Sitting to my right on your radio dial is Jose Valonte. He's taking care of our Facebook stuff. We'll talk about that as well. And also behind the big board, it is the producer extraordinaire, a guy you hear all over Las Vegas Golden Knights game day broadcasts. You also hear him every weekday right here on Fox Sports Radio 3 to 4 on the T.C. Martin Show as he produces that. Pretty damn good show too, man. T.C., man, that guy will inform you. Get some great guests. It's a cool show. And that, of course, Chris Magnum Chapman behind the big board. Mags will talk to us and help us out here with Nightcap in a minute. But don't forget a couple things real quickly. Twitter, it's at Out of Line 1340 AM. Facebook is just simply Out of Line. That's our Facebook fan page, OUTTALINE. And, of course, without you, there's no show. So call in, man, anytime. The Fox Sports Studio line, 702-876-1340.
Hi, this is Bubby, and it's time for What's on Tap.
Yeah, What's on Tap is pouring out thanks to Bubby's University on South Hualapai between Tropicana and Flamingo, a great place to watch every game. Tomorrow night, a huge game going on late afternoon, early evening. I guess early evening, it's after 6 o'clock. Bubby's a great place to check it out. Again, I told you all who's in studio with us, Jose Valonte is working the camera, does a podcast here in Las Vegas every week, and it is called Straight Bet Sports. And you can follow Jose on Twitter at Jose_Valonte, and definitely check him out. Again, Missy will be out of the studio this week. She was out last week as well. We should see her back hopefully by Thursday for the 51s opener at Cashman Field. Last year at Cashman, we got our first 51s report of the year coming up a little bit later on. And then Missy hopefully will be back in studio with us next week as we prepare for the Stanley Cup playoffs. So excited about that. And talking about that nightcap today, you can hear interviews with William Carlson, a one-on-one I did yesterday after the game, and a great one Mags did with Jonathan Marchessault. You got to hear this. If you didn't hear it on the post-game show of the Golden Knights, you hear it today. Some great questions. Mags pulled something out of the bag in that question about scoring goals in William Carlson's home country. He's very close to being the all-time leader, and a lot of players have come from his country, so it is a big feat. I wasn't even aware of it. As a matter of fact, his line mate, Jonathan Marchessault, wasn't aware of it till Mags made him aware last night. You'll hear that in the interview. Alan Snell, founder of LVSportsBiz.com, former writer for the Review Journal, is going to be joining us as well and talking about the Vegas Golden Knights playoff ticket vow. You don't know what that is? Stick around. You'll hear about it. Vernie Fratto, host of Rebel Minute on ESPN and a regular guest on several local sports talk shows. Bernie's an expert at all things. Great stories and, man, accurate stuff. Definitely stick around for that. I've got some good stuff with Bernie today. And Emily Van Buskirk, who is the lead college football and basketball writer for the SportsFanJournal.com and co-host of the biweekly national podcast known as Sideline SAS with three S's. Emily will be here also talking NCAA March Madness, which is wound down to two games. And today is the opening day for the Las Vegas 51s report. As I told you, you'll hear from new manager Tony DeFrancesco. He's a really cool guy, and I'm looking forward to what the 51s are going to do this year. Last year, the Mets AAA affiliate will be here in Las Vegas. And you can check out, if you want to see the show and you want to see us, not just hear us, we're on Facebook Live right now. You can go to Missy Lynn's page. You can go to my page, Brian Feldman, or check out Jose Valonte's page. And after the game, I'm going to get Jose to put that on the Out of Line page, too, so that'll be here there for everyone as well. What's on Tap is brought to you by Bubby's University, where you can earn your degree in food, draft beer, gaming, and the hard stuff. The only major is a good time. Bring your Rebel ID and your first beer is free. You can enroll 24 hours a day. Yes, that means they never close. Bubby's University at 4570 South Hualapai between Tropicana and Flamingo. For more information, go to bubbysuniversity.com.
Hockey players, as you know, are warriors. They don't give up. They come to play every game.
It's time for Nightcap, a cup full of the Vegas Golden Knights. From highlights to interviews to special events, the puck starts here.
on the right side wall. Tipped out. Here's Carlson. He's got an unabetted pass. Left circle. Carlson alone. He scores! All through his legs! Carlson shorthanded! 3-2 Knights! Oh, can you believe it? Shorthanded goals in back-to-back games for William Carlson. That's the prettiest I think we've seen all year.
Final home game, regular season at T-Mobile Arena. Talk about your experience and what about that goal between the legs? Something pretty special.
I think it was a great game from the get-go. Two teams that really wanted to win, and lucky I got the chance to get the breakaway, and I just decided to do that and went in.
Pacific Division champions. What does that mean to you?
What's that?
Pacific Division champions. What does that mean to you?
No, it's good. But it's only one step of the way. We want to come into the playoffs and continue to do good.
And they got three more games on the road. What is it going to take for this team to continue to have this kind of success in the playoffs?
I think we should try to continue playing good here the last three games. And then just get ready for the playoffs.
Get ready for the playoffs. Mags, we've watched this team all season long. We've used terms like miraculous, amazing, stunning. You used a term last night, which I thought was very fitting in the press conference when you said misfits. I wanted to chime in and say, come on, Gerard, you've heard them called misfits before. But you know what? He's just being politically correct. He's saying what a coach said. I guess what maybe we should say is, look, they were not the top nine players on their team. That's the way their coaches felt. They felt that they were not one of the nine players worthy of keeping. So they all started this season. And even Bill Foley, when I interviewed him, Chris, said a couple of weeks ago, he said that they all were playing and came in with a chip on their shoulder. That would be because, like you said, they were misfits.
Well, you know, the only reason I used that word was because players in the locker room had used it to describe
themselves.
But you know, the thing is, I'm done using adjectives like amazing, miraculous, because there are no adjectives to describe this. What we witnessed yesterday and what we're witnessing is something that we will never, ever, ever see again in the history of sports. Now, I know the rules are going to be similar for Seattle, but what Vegas has done is, first of all, you start with Bill Foley. He knew exactly what he wanted the day he got this franchise. He knew it. He went out and he found the best general manager he could find, a guy who had experience building teams, a guy who learned under one of the all-time great American hockey minds in Herb Brooks. And George McPhee knew how to build a team. He knew exactly what he was looking for. He wasn't looking for the guy who was going to score the most goals or the flashiest guy or the guy who was going to be able to sell jerseys. He went out and he found a group of guys, 30 players that he drafted in the expansion draft, plus a couple of throw-ins that he got for not taking certain players in the expansion draft, and he built a team. He didn't go out and find a superstar. He built something here in the desert. Him and Bill Foley knew exactly what they wanted in a coach. They went out and they got the best coach they could find in Gerard Gallant. And to me, the team really fits Gallant's personality. They're gritty. They play hard. They have a bit of an aggressive side to them. And once they get going, they are relentless. And I think it's fitting that this is the team that we got here in Vegas, because it kind of goes against everything that this city is. Coming in, there was no glitz and glamour about these guys. They were blue-collar guys who were going to show up every single day and work their asses off to try to gain respect. And maybe that's what these guys did when they built Las Vegas. I wasn't around when guys like Bugsy Siegel came here, but they had a vision when those guys came here. And Bill Foley had a vision. And I'll never forget, the very first question I ever asked Marc-Andre Fleury, it was a day after the expansion draft. We were at the Armory down at T-Mobile Arena. They brought out Braden McNabb, Jason Garrison, Derek England, and Marc-Andre Fleury. And I asked Fleury point blank, when your owner says he wants to make the playoffs in 3 years and win the cup in 6 years, what is your feeling? And he looked at me and he kind of smiled and he said, why wait so long? He said, I don't know where I'm going to be in 6 years. I'm not a young guy.
I remember that.
And, you know, they've really kind of gone with that, you know, and it's why wait so long? And then, you know, you factor in the 1 October tragedy and the way these guys, you know, the thing that I find amazing about that is all these guys, with the exception of Derek England, had only been in this city a few weeks when that happened. A lot of them didn't arrive until the end of the summer. They got here for training camp in, you know, late August, early to mid-September. This wasn't their home. This was just a place that they had been drafted to and were going to play. For all these guys, Jonathan Marchessault, for William Karlsson, for Marc-Andre Fleury, for Nate Schmidt, this is their home. This is their city now. And that event sped up the process for those guys as far as them calling this home. But they will forever be a part of this city and the magic that goes on in Las Vegas. You know, if there's anything that Las Vegas teaches you, it's that everything is possible in life, because this city wouldn't exist without that mindset. And, you know, those guys, I mean, it really is something special. And I mean, that's really the best adjective to describe it. What we are a part of, what we are witnessing, what we are going through right now as a city, I don't think it'll ever be captured. Even if the Raiders came here and won the Super Bowl in the first year, I just don't think it'll match what we've seen this season with the Golden Knights.
No, you know, special is a good adjective. Not wearing a helmet special, but special. And these guys are incredible. And a couple of things, you know, you talk about guys adopting the city. A guy like Pierre Belmar, I mean, what he said yesterday, the way they recorded it, you could see how much he loves the city. And what a fitting A on his chest. He's the one guy that I wondered, why did he get the A? Man, I have been absolutely sold on that guy being one of the leaders of this team.
The funny thing is, he actually told my colleague Helen Yee that the other day. He said this is the only city he's ever played hockey in where he felt like he could live here after hockey. And I told her, you know, for you to get that on Tuesday before anyone else had heard that, that's pretty cool, because, you know, I think a lot of these guys feel that way, that this is a place that they like. I mean, that's why Derek England moved here, because he loved the city. It's an amazing city.
Well, he moved here also because he met a young lady he's married to, and her family's from Vegas. So.
The irony, and I'm going to tie it into me, today is April 1st. I moved to Las Vegas on April 1st of 1999. So today is my 19 years in this city, and I fell in love with it. This is my home. I can't ever see myself living anywhere else in the United States, because this city just has everything I want. And
I love it here too.
You know, man. I think we all, you know, Jose as well. You know,
disagree with you at all.
It takes a special kind of person to live here and thrive here. But I've been all over the world. I've been to 50 countries. There's no city in the world like Las Vegas. There really isn't.
No, it's an amazing community, and we really saw it on October 1st, how probably the most transient city in our country. People transplanted from all over the place came together as one community, and then the Vegas Golden Knights just carried that to a whole nother level and have really embraced that motto, Vegas Strong. And as I said, it's been nothing short of miraculous, again, using the adjectives. But one of the things you did leave out with Gallant, Mags, one of the things about Gallant and this team and his reflection is, Gerard Gallant does not make excuses, and the players on this team do not make excuses. Whether they play good, bad, it doesn't matter. They come out and they stand up, they say what they got to say, and they move forward. I really respect this team. We do got to get to get to Alan Snell, who I have to ask him about this vow of ticket holders. Before that, Mags, before you get him on the phone, I want to hear Chris talk to a guy last night who William Karlsson tied for the points lead of the Vegas Golden Knights. They both have 75 right now. Jonathan Marchessault, just like William Karlsson, has had absolutely NHL breakout seasons. The two of them are the backbone and the key to the first line. They are great. And this is Magnum talking to Jonathan Marchessault after the game.
How big was it to get out to that early 1-0 lead, the long pregame ceremony honoring the victims, and just to get out to that fast lead, very similar to like the October 10th game?
Yeah, I mean, it was huge. I think our past two games we had a good start right off the bat in first period, and that's how we need to play. I think to win hockey games at that time of year, you got to be ready and play 60 minutes. And last two games, can't complain. I think we played some good hockey.
Last three wins, you guys have beaten teams that figure to be in the playoffs. You guys have beaten them. How's that set you guys up for potential matchups in the playoffs?
Yeah, I mean, it's good. That's the way we need to play. When we face good teams, I think we're ready, and we need to be ready. And we execute it right away. And, I mean, I think our past 48 hours has been good.
I don't know if you guys are aware, but William Karlsson is two goals away from breaking the single-season record for Swedish players with goals scored. Are you guys going to try a little harder to help him get that record?
I didn't know, but definitely going to help him. I wanted him to get his 48th goal there, and he keeps going. And I would love to see that happening.
Pretty cool, Mags. Good guy, and I'll tell you what, a hell of a hockey player.
You know, it's something that a lot of people don't get to see. But for me, the moment I realized that Jonathan Marchessault was a member of this community and a fantastic guy was a couple months ago. I guess it was probably January. There was a Make-A-Wish, and Make-A-Wish is obviously, you know, where these sick people get the opportunity to do something that they would never have the opportunity to experience. And there was a young boy by the name of Gavin, and the Golden Knights did Make-A-Wish with Gavin, where he got to watch a practice in uniform. He was on skates. He was in the box with the players. And Jonathan Marchessault with that young man, it moved me, you know, because the way he treated Gavin like he was his own child. And, you know, we all have heroes, right, growing up as kids. To this day, Jonathan Marchessault has an autographed picture of Gavin hanging in his locker.
Wow, that's cool.
At City National Arena. And, you know, when I asked Jonathan about that a couple weeks ago, he basically said, you know, when you are around a child like that or a person like that, you realize hockey is a game. And, you know, it's people like that that really move them. And so, you know, he found a hero in Gavin. And to me, for a guy who just signed a contract that's going to pay him $25 million over the next 5 years, to find a hero in a young boy with an illness, to me, that speaks volumes about what kind of character and what kind of person he has. And he's exactly the kind of guy that Bill Foley and George McPhee wanted, with that type of character. And, you know, he's a guy who really, really is just an amazing player, and he's really a fantastic person.
I think a lot of the Golden Knights, it's why they mesh together so well. From what I've seen and the guys that I've met and talked to, they're great guys. Listen, let's get out. Got our guest on the phone, Alan Snell, lvsportsbiz.com. You definitely want to become a subscriber, become the 50,000 plus one. Alan, running behind today, so we're going to be kind of quick with this. And Alan's going to be part of the show doing LV Sports Biz Minute. But this article that you did on Tuesday is what I want to talk to you about, my friend. We saw each other at the game last night, got to enjoy it. But we have talked about this, and you brought it up before, opposing fans at T-Mobile Arena in droves. And we really heard it at the Minnesota Wild game about a week and a half ago, where Go Knights Go was getting drowned out by the Wild, Go Wild Go, and also the heckling of Marc-Andre Fleury at the end of the game. It looks like the Golden Knights are cognizant of that, based on your article, and they are now making season ticket holders take a vow that they won't sell their tickets. And if they do, they can, in that vow, I guess, pay more and still sell their tickets. But, Alan, there's a way they've got all this figured out. I think it was by StubHub. Please go ahead and fill everyone in on this.
Good morning, gentlemen. Yes, you gave a nice description of a backstory to the situation, Brian. And basically, you have a team made up of business folks who have been around the block. They've worked for other teams. In fact, they have worked in markets in Florida where this issue does come up. So they tried to come up with an idea to really motivate the season ticket holder to keep the ticket. And it comes down to two very simple options. Number one, as you said, take the vow. And if you do take the vow, you pay a per-game ticket of approximately an average of $25 more than your season ticket. If you don't take the vow and you want the other option of having the chance to resell your ticket, then your ticket will cost you, on average, about $75 to $80 more over your regular season ticket. So through financial motivation, they're trying to get fans to keep it within the Golden Knights family, so to speak. You brought up a great example with the Wild. We've seen it numerous times through the season when the Penguins and Red Wings and Blackhawks roll into town. And the playoffs, as you know, are a completely different animal. And it's always good to have a home ice advantage by having everyone cheer on your behalf at a home playoff game.
No question about it. It was disturbing to us. You asked the Turk that question in a press conference, and he said, it doesn't bother him at all, but it's funny. It might not bother him, but when you listen to the players, they definitely are aware of when the fans are cheering and when they're not, and especially when you're getting crowds upwards of 18,000. 18,458, a record last night in the finale of the regular season. I imagine that number is just going to continue to grow throughout the playoffs. They'll find ways to pass them in standing room. But Alan, are they going to be able to really police this? I mean, does StubHub really have a foolproof thing? There's still got to be a way that people are going to sell their tickets and get them at the cheaper price, right?
Well, when you purchase your playoff ticket and you take the vow, you'll electronically get the ticket through a flash feature. And if you take the vow, the Golden Knights will basically block you from reselling at the StubHub. But, you know, at the end of the day, you're right, Brian. If you really want to unload the ticket somehow, you'll probably think of some way to do it. But I give props to the Golden Knights business folks. I've bugged Kerry Buchholz, the president, all season long about the makeup of the regular season crowds. And believe me, they have taken notice of the description that you had mentioned in terms of the backstory to this issue. They're aware of it, and I give them props for at least trying. And to the best of my knowledge, this is the first playoff ticket approach of this type used in Major League sports.
Alan, it's Jose. I have a quick question for you. So you did say in your article that basically T-Mobile's venue has 100% capacity for hockey at 17,367. The team is drawing a percentage of 103.7% capacity. So they're filling the stadium, which is, I believe, the fourth highest capacity in the NHL. So the fact that they're filling the arena and they're selling tickets, isn't that a good thing for the Golden Knights? And the fact that they're trying to take these tickets away from certain people and bring in the crowds, I get it. You want to have your home fan base. But filling the arena and selling the tickets and making the money, isn't that the most important thing right now?
Well, as you mentioned, they're filling the arena. They're moving up the percentage now. It's probably around 103.8%, 103.9%. And they have had no problem selling tickets. The issue has been the makeup of the people buying the tickets. So it's a good problem to have. I don't think you're going to have, like you said, much of a problem at this point selling the tickets. Maybe years down the road, you won't be so picky on who buys the tickets. But at this point, with the playoffs on the horizon coming up in a little more than a week, you just want to have your home town crowd behind the team. It's, as a fan, it's a little discouraging to come to your building and hear the opponent fans cheering when they do well in your own building. And I think the home ice has, you know, as the coach has mentioned, has been, in fact, I believe he actually used the term, it's been an extra man for the hockey team. So, you know, you can't underestimate the impact of the kind of crowds that we've seen. It's been a magical run this year, and I think, you know, the community and the fans bonding with the team at the games have been a big factor.
I agree with you 100%. He is Alan Snell, founder, LVSportsBiz.com. You can follow Alan on Twitter, LVSportsBiz.com. Alan, we appreciate you. We'll look forward to the LV Sports Business Minute coming up on future shows.
Absolutely, Brian. You're doing a great job. I look forward to contributing any way I can. Have a great Sunday, guys.
We appreciate you. Listen, we got to take a break. We got Bernie Fratto on the other side. Looking very forward to talking to Bernie. We're running a little behind. Let's get to break. Get to Bernie. We got Emily Van Buskirk down the road. And don't forget Tony DiFrancenzo, the coach of the 51s, will be here as well. This is why I'm hot.
I think we lost Northwestern in the early part of February, and now we're going to be playing April, and we haven't lost since then. I mean, it's fulfilling. I'm just a different dude about this stuff. I just look at everything so holistically. This has been a great experience. If we win this championship, it's going to be wonderful for so many people.
John Beilein, to me, still the most underrated coach in the country. I mean, this guy is doing just a phenomenal job. Bernie Fratto, host of Rebel Minute, and of course, you've heard this guy all over sports radio in Las Vegas and around the country for many years. The all-knowledgeable, my good friend, sometimes colleague, Bernie Fratto. Welcome to the show. Sorry about being late, my friend. We got a little long-winded this morning.
Plenty to talk about. Ready to go, my man.
All right, well, let's get it going, Bernie. First, I want to start out with, before we get into that, I definitely want to talk about Michigan and the NCAA tournament, but the Golden Knights, just your assessment of this whole season.
Well, yeah, it's been magical. Let's put this in perspective. The last expansion team to make the playoffs the first year was 50 years ago, the St. Louis Blues, coached by Scotty Bowman. So this has been an incredible ride. I am hopeful they can keep this level, but even if they never win another game the rest of the year, this has already been a magical ride, far beyond what anybody could have expected.
Yeah, it was, and excited to see what happens in the postseason. I want to clear something up to our listening audience and to my friends that have been texting me saying I've been a hater and predicting they're going out in the first round. That's not at all what I was saying. I was saying if they did, I would not be disappointed at all. And what I said is hockey jumps up to another level that people that aren't familiar with hockey here are about to see. I said the Golden Knights, I feel, have been playing at another level all season with that chip on their shoulder.
Let me respond to that, Brian. Let me respond to that because you're playing right into what I wanted to say.
Go right ahead.
I covered the 95-96 Detroit Red Wings. They were 62-13 in the regular season. They accumulated 131 points in the President's Cup trophy. They were at a level no one could have expected. Everybody thought they'd automatically win the Stanley Cup. Winnipeg in the first round took them to six games. St. Louis took them to seven games. And then they had the epic series losing to Colorado in the Chris Draper Claude Lemieux incident. The point, and I'm piggybacking on your point, is when you reach a certain level above what you are really in reality, it's just simply difficult to keep that same level as the Stanley Cup playoffs are an entirely different animal.
Without question, and that's what I said is, and my point to everyone is, can they go deep? Absolutely, but it is going to take everyone healthy. I did ask Gerard Gallant last night about Riley Smith and David Perron. He said he's expecting everyone to be ready for the playoffs, and my feeling is that Marc-Andre Fleury is going to have to play the best hockey of his life for this team to go deep into the playoffs just because of how intense the playoffs are, and a lot of these guys are not familiar with what they're about to experience. Bernie, next point as we are running.
Well, hang on, Brian.
Go ahead.
I wanted to address that as well.
Okay.
The fact that they won the Pacific Division. This is a team last Thursday going into Wednesday's game. They were only 7-9 in their last 30 games. So they rallied and came up huge, I believe. And in winning the Pacific Division, they've guaranteed themselves at least the first two rounds, if they make that far, of home ice advantage. So that's going to go a long way.
Oh, I agree with that 100%. I think, you know, T-Mobile has been magical for this team all year. But, again, I don't think it matters where they play. I think their game has got to be elevated on the road.
It doesn't matter where they play, but you'd rather have two rounds minimum of home ice advantage than not.
Oh, I agree. I agree 100%. I'm looking forward to it. And as I said, to me, there can be no disappointment no matter what happens. It's
right.
Not that I'm
a
hater. It's not that I don't think that they can make a run. I'm just saying I am not going to be disappointed personally, and I don't think anyone out there should be. Bernie,
you're being objective. I think you're being fair and objective and honest that we have to take the season in total. If someone would have told Las Vegas last October the Golden Knights would win the Pacific Division and have two potential home ice advantage in the first two rounds, who wouldn't take that?
50 wins, over 100 points. Are you kidding me? I am thrilled. This has been just great to watch, and any true hockey fan out there knows how special this season has been. Bernie, segueing into the NCAA tournament, are you surprised at the championship game matchup now that it's all said and done?
Well, I'm in the same bracket with you, Brian, as T.C. Martin. Pull it up and see who I've got in the finals. You got Michigan over Villanova. You can pull it up right now on your computer. I've got Michigan beating Villanova in the finals. So, no, I'm not surprised because that's what I put in my bracket.
That's crazy. That hell of a pick. I know that on the other side, I don't think – you might have had Kansas. I know you didn't have Chicago, Illinois. I should say –
I didn't have either one.
Yeah. You know, either way, it's a hell of a prediction. What John Beilein has done, I hope that this finally gives the guy respect. They're all talking about Jay Wright and, you know, about – two national championship appearances in the last three seasons. Yeah, that's great. But look at the body of work John Beilein has put in with different teams, putting them together. The one thing I will say about Michigan this year, Bernie, is Michigan has played decent defense in the past. I have never seen John Beilein put together a defensive unit like he has this year in Ann Arbor.
Yeah, metrically, Brian, it supports your statement. They are still... Well, first of all, they were metrically one of the best defensive teams in the country throughout the season. Every Tuesday I'm on with Ed and Clay at 1 o'clock. I predicted a month ago I thought Michigan would win the whole thing. And then when I did the Sunset Station seminar with Chuck Esposito the night before the tournament started, I predicted Michigan would win the whole thing. They get stops. They make baskets. They were 9-3 down the stretch in the Big Ten. Then they won four games in 4 days in the Big Ten tournament. And now you see where they're at. In Big Ten play, they out-rebounded their opponents by 9 per game. They can shoot threes. They'll defend. I think Xavier Simpson will do a fine job on Jalen Brunson tomorrow night. And I'm going to stick to my prediction that Michigan's going to close this thing out.
Yeah, I think that Villanova offers a whole different type of challenge because Villanova can shoot it from five different spots on the floor all the time. They're big guys. Eric Pascal, Omari Spellman, these guys can knock down threes. And that's going to be the real challenge. Is Mo Wagner going to be able to guard out on the floor for all game long, because he's going to have to do that, Bernie, for them to win this game?
It's not just on him, Brian. Michigan can throw a lot of different bodies at Villanova. They're actually bigger and longer than Villanova, and defensively, schematically, they're more sophisticated. I also think Michigan's three-point shooting woes, which appeared in three of their five games, certainly against Florida State and certainly yesterday, will reappear. So Michigan's a whole different animal than Villanova's used to seeing as well. So I know all the announcers are saying what you just said. They got five guys that can shoot. All of a sudden, they can shoot from everywhere. They've been doing it all year. But now they get to have to do it against Michigan in one game for all the marbles. If they played this game 10 times, I don't know, it might go 5-5. But Michigan's only got to beat them once. I'm sticking to my prediction, and I'm blocking out all the white noise.
I don't blame you. I'm just saying, Bernie, if Villanova shoots anywhere close to the way they did against Kansas, the Wildcats win another double-figure victory, and that's my opinion.
Well, you know what, Brian? You may well be right, buddy. Look, first of all, you can make a case on paper that Villanova is the best team in the tournament. It was the best team in the tournament, not Virginia. They average 87 points a game. They're very offensively prolific. They shoot 50% from the floor. Even going into last night, they were averaging 12 three-pointers per game, and they bang out 18 of them last night. They were absolutely unstoppable. Yeah, if they do that again tomorrow night, if Villanova makes 18 three-pointers, you're going to be right, Brian. Villanova's going to be crown champion.
Yeah, it's going to be tough. Man, Bernie, last thing I had to talk about, Tiger Woods is back in shape and back at the Masters. Is he at all what he used to be? Is he capable? And Bernie, are you at all concerned about a podcast you did in 2013 with me on Inside the Fratto House when we said he would not get Jack Nicklaus? And
well,
you know what?
That. You thought he'd win again.
You said he would never beat Jack Nicklaus's his record.
That's
and
correct.
I said that he would. Correct. And the last couple of years, Bernie, I've eaten crow. My foot's been squarely in my mouth, and I've bitten down several times. But I'm saying right now that what I'm seeing is he has that fire again. I don't know if he's got the body in the game again, but he's got the fire, and we all know that his scrambling ability, and when his short game is on, it's the best I've ever seen.
So what's the question you're asking?
The question
I'm
asking,
win another major?
Do you think he'll win another major? Do you think is there any more concern now about him catching Jack than there was in 2013 when we did the podcast?
You got a better chance of Carly Rae Jepsen re-recording the Gilligan's Island theme song and selling a million copies than Tiger catching Jack.
Oh, I love it. Okay. Well, Bernie, I'm going to say this. I don't think he's going to catch Jack now. I will retract my statement from 2013, but I'm going to also stick to this. I think he will get another major before he retires. I really do.
You may well be right, and we can revisit that conversation, but I'm sticking to my story.
That's Bernie Fratto. You'll hear him all over the place. Again, Rebel Minute during the season, and Bernie's on shows all week long, constantly. Bernie, always appreciated having you on the show, man.
Brian, appreciate being with you, buddy. Happy Easter to you and the Brian Feldman family and all the out-of-line fans who are listening in 16 countries on 43 languages, over 7 million listeners now. Congratulations, Brian. You've built a nice product there.
There's my promo. Bernie, we appreciate you, my friend. As we head to break, Emily Van Buskirk will be on the other side. She is the college football and basketball lead writer for thesportsfanjournal.com. Definitely check that out. She is also co-host of Sideline SaaS, a great podcast, and she'll be with us to break down the NCAA National Championship game even more right after this.
It's not something I dreamt about. I didn't even dream about it. So it's a little out of my understanding right now. I got to really let it soak in, but really not until it's over. I want to concentrate on Michigan and really enjoying this team, really enjoying preparing for games with them, practicing with them, obviously playing in games with them.
Okay. Listen, it's a fact that we are down to two teams in the 2018 version of the greatest sports tournament in existence. However, it was a year I saw something I wasn't sure I would ever see in my life, and that is a 16 seed beating a 1 seed. And to make it even sweeter, I got to see an 11 seed, a true pre-tournament Cinderella, make the Final Four. Like every year, it has had a bit of everything. And also, like every year, Emily Van Buskirk is on the line to help make sense of the madness. And Emily will let us know who will win and why. Talk about putting you on the spot. Emily!
Yeah, a little bit.
Hey.
A little early for that.
You know what? When it's all said and done, the cream rose to the top, didn't it?
Well, you guys, you know, you crushed some dreams yesterday. And that's okay, because you know, Michigan played some solid ball. But I'm just glad if I could be happy this morning waking up, that you're happy waking up.
Well, so, you know, I am a Michigan State alumni. So right. Michigan is you know, us Michigan State alumni, you know what we usually say? We say Michigan State is the University of Michigan. but that's not the case anyways. No, pretty amazing what's happened, Em. And looking at both these games, you heard Jay Wright responding to, has it sank in that he's about to play in his second national championship game in 3 years, and he's being revered, and he's great, and he's awesome, and there's no question about it. He is putting together one hell of a team of five guys that can shoot from anywhere on the floor. You've got bigs that can bang threes. They're so tough to defend on the perimeter and inside in the post, but then again, why are people not talking about John Beilein and how great of a coach this man is?
I know. That's really, to me, of the two games, that was really the true college basketball tournament game was watching his Michigan team. You know, yes, they had to put to sleep a Cinderella, which is sad, but they played some of the most cohesive, technically sound basketball I've seen all tournament. And it's going to be quite the clash between their, you know, perimeter defense and Villanova's three-point shooting game. So I'm actually really excited. I'm bummed for Kansas, obviously, but you know what? They didn't show up. It was embarrassing. I'm over it, and I'm excited for the championship game.
Well, you know, I don't know, Em. Can you really say it's embarrassing? I mean, look what Villanova does. 18 three-pointers made out of 40 attempts. Yeah. They break an NCAA Final Four record. 66 so far in the tournament breaks a single NCAA tournament record. And 454 three-pointers on the season for Villanova, a single-season D1 record. I mean, come on. When a team hits 18 three-pointers, they're going to beat anyone.
Yeah, who knew three-point shooting was so important? But the problem is that there were a lot of uncontested shots. So when I was watching, I would notice that Kansas wouldn't quite make it out there, you know, to get a hand in the face. And if it wasn't that, it was inside baskets that were just too easy. You know, if you have a guy like Azubuike, he needs to be bodying up on people, getting in people's faces. And Kansas just was not in that place yesterday. So, yes, Villanova shot lights out, was unconscious, but they also had a lot of room and space to do so.
Okay, no, I understand, and you know, I'm not saying Bill Self, I'm not saying that he didn't prepare his team for this game. I think that, like you said, they didn't play their best basketball, and Villanova was so spot on in everything they were doing. Now, Michigan, a much more physical team, uncharacteristically a very stout defensive team, which you don't see Michigan. I mean, not that they've been terrible defensively, but they've always been more offensive-minded. Not this year. This year, this is a physical team. They body up on you. They are one of the better defensive rebounding teams in the country, and they do a great job of running teams off the three-point line. Is that going to be enough? And how big is Wagner going to have to play against Eric Pascal and Amari Spellman to win this game?
Honestly, he's going to have another huge game, but it's not improbable for him to do so. He seems to be a tournament guy. He's so fun to watch. He digs in, you know, comes back from deficits. He's the clutch guy that you want. And we're going to see like an unstoppable force meeting an immovable object in this championship game, because the three-point shooting versus the best defensive team that was left in the tournament, a team in Michigan that's proficient defensively, you know, from all parts of the court. So I honestly don't know. I don't know if I can pick a winner. I'm just going to have to go with who I want to win. But I love watching that Wagner kid. He is unbelievable. I also like Jordan Poole. I thought he played a great game and was a good supporting staff to Wagner.
Oh, let me tell you about Poole. This kid is a freshman. Give him a couple years. You've got another superstar. Some of the things that guy does with the basketball, especially his ability to drive the lane, is incredible. And watch this kid get nothing better. I know he made that miraculous shot against Houston in the second round, but that is not all this kid is going to be good for. As time goes on and he becomes a more important player, I look for Poole to be in the NBA a few years down the road. He's got all the skills. And, you know, as we talked about it, the cream rises to the top. Villanova, the second most popular pick to win it all in ESPN's Tournament Challenge, and Michigan, the eighth most popular pick to win it all. So again, when all the dust clears, here we have two of the better teams in the country, Michigan and Loyola Chicago, the two hottest teams in the country, coming to the Final Four. Michigan remains that way, and Villanova is just what they are. Damn good, fundamentally sound, and the best player in the country, by the way, resides on Villanova's basketball team. So does the cream, you're saying you're going with who you want to win. I'm assuming maybe that is Michigan, but the whole thing is, realistically, does Michigan beat this team? If you talk about the cream rising to the top is Villanova, right?
I think Villanova is obviously, as a whole, a better basketball team, and I think Jay Wright is a great coach. But the three-point shooting that everyone's marveling over is not something you can always live and die by. I mean, if that dries up, what do you do? So I think I'd like to see Villanova be able to adjust when something goes wrong. And we know that Michigan can do that. They've come from behind in victories. They've hit last-minute shots. We know that Michigan can adjust and make the most out of a bad situation. I'm not sure Villanova has really been tested that way. So that's why I would go with Michigan, because they've been in bad situations and made the best out of them.
See,
so that's my pick.
See, and to me, with Michigan and Villanova, because of their almost uncanny ability to bang the triples from every single player on the floor. That is a team, they haven't had to do this a great deal this season, but I believe if they get in a situation where they're behind, I still think they have the ability to come back, because everyone on the team can hit threes. And again, for Michigan, what bodes well is their great ability to challenge three-point shooters and run them off the line. But here's my reason why Villanova's going to win, and I think they're going to win in double digits. I think overall, Michigan has – what do Michigan suck at? They suck at one thing, Em. They are one of the worst free throw shooting teams in the country. And if it comes down to free throws, which a lot of big games do, Michigan is going to be in trouble. Unless they have a magical night at the line, which sometimes does happen to bad free throw shooting teams. But that, to me, is an intangible that can't be overcome in a close basketball game. That's what worries me for the Maize and Blue, and I think that that's why we're going to see the Wildcats ripping down the Nets again for the second time in 3 years. I'm not going to be unhappy about it. I just would like to see John Beilein get his national championship, even though he's from that other school down the road, as we say about them in East Lansing. Either way, the guy is deserving, and my God in heaven, I don't want to ever hear someone talk about John Beilein again and not say he's an elite coach in college basketball.
Absolutely, and he's just like a good guy, you know. Not that Jay Wright isn't. He seems very, you know, nice as well, but John Beilein just seems like a good kind of guy. Like, you want to root for him. So I'm pulling for Michigan. I think they're going to surprise people. They're just so scrappy, and I love Poole. I think Poole's going to hit a – I think it's going to be a buzzer beater. It's a three-pointer from Poole, so – that's my pick.
All right. Well, I'm gonna go parlay my money of my winning ticket yesterday. I had Michigan giving up 5, and I had Villanova giving up 5.5. So I'm gonna take that money and parlay it. Michigan on the money line, just so I can jinx the Wolverines. I'll Chris win the Wolverines today. That's what I'm gonna do. I'm gonna see win special. Hey, listen, she is Emily Van Buskirk, lead college football and basketball writer for the Sports Fan Journal, and she is also co-host of Sideline Sass National Podcast. You definitely want to check it out, and when you're looking for it, it is Sass with 3 S's, S-A-S-S-S, and follow her on Twitter at Emilnem. That is E-M-I-L-N-E-M. Em, we appreciate you. We'll have you on again soon.
Absolutely. Sounds good. Bye, guys.
All right. We'll see you later. We're almost out of time, so we're going to fly through this and get to our 51s report. And now, don't even go to a break, Mags. We'll forget that. I had a chance to talk a couple of weeks ago, actually about a month ago, I got a chance to talk to the new Las Vegas manager for the Las Vegas 51s, final year that they will be the AAA franchise of the Las Vegas Mets. How about the New York Mets? They're the Las Vegas Mets to a degree. But this guy, Tony DeFrancesco, I really like him. Came from the Houston organization. I think we will. He doesn't have any aspiration to coach in the majors, but he's a good minor league manager. Everyone seems to like him. I think he'll be a player's coach, and I look forward to getting a chance to cover him this year. This was part of the conversation I had with Tony a couple weeks ago.
Let's do this. I think the 36th season. Oh, we can go over here. We can walk wherever you want us to go. You guide us, and we're going. 36th season with the 51s now have been here. This will be their 36th season, and Tony DeFrancesco is their brand new coach, but not a new coach in the Pacific Coast League of Division. Matter of fact, he is, I believe, tied for the record of championships in the PCL at this point with Del Crandall, right?
That's what I heard, yeah. But I don't think he has the PCL championships, the AAA championships, so I think I have 2 on him right now.
You're doing pretty good. Tell me this. You're in the Houston organization for all these years and stuff, and I know you've probably been asked this a decent amount, but pretty exciting what they did last year.
Oh, it was incredible, you know, to be part of that. And, you know, Lunau from years ago, he had his faith in me. He let me manage the team back in 12 when they let Brad Mills go. And I was there when we were struggling. We had a $20 million payroll, and you know, we had young Altuve was there. Marwin Gonzalez was on the team. Keuchel was just kind of feeling his own. And to watch these guys develop in the last, 5 or 6 years and win a championship is very rewarding as a manager and coach and assistant. And, you know, I get my first World Series ring coming, and I'm real excited about it.
Really cool, and especially what happened down in Houston, have the tragedy, and then to have the city be able to come together for a World Series. I remember in 2008 seeing that happen in New Orleans after Katrina, the Saints won the Super Bowl, and it was kind of, for me, it was almost a goose pimple type of thing.
Yeah, you know, when that all went down, the way the team came through, the front office, all the players in the minor league, we all were donating as much as we could. You know, Carlos Correa was handing out mattresses, and players were going and seeing all the, at the Toyota Center and meeting people and, you know, wishing them luck. And like I said, Jim Crane did an awesome job, and Reed Ryan, I can't tip my hat off to them enough for what they give back to the city.
It was great. And now, moving forward, transitioning, here you are, 2018, you're in Las Vegas. Talk about the transition, the phone call that made it happen, and, I mean, kind of a big change of life.
It was, yeah. You know, I was not renewed by the Astros after, 7 years there. And, baseball, that's the way it goes sometimes. You kind of move on, and I was sitting on my couch, and Sandy Alderson called me. He says, hey, Tony, we're looking to make some changes at our upper levels. We want you to fly to New York, and you get out here. I was on a plane the next day. I met the front office, J.P. Ricciardi and Sandy, and Jeff Wilpon was there, and we talked it out for a while, and before you know it, I'm the AAA manager of the 51s, and very excited to come to Vegas. I love coming here over the years. I know the fans, you know, they got some tough fans here, you know, just from sitting on the other side. And, you know, they went after Backman, they went after Lopez, the whole crew of managers that I watch come through. If they don't win, they let them know it. And, you know, Thursday is always a fun time to be around these fans. And hopefully they'll be off my back a little bit.
Thursday's coming up this week as the Vegas Golden Knights the 51 start their season this Thursday. Pretty exciting that they open it up. Definitely check it out. They'll be playing El Paso all weekend. They've got a 5-game set starting on Thursday. It'll be there Thursday, be there next week. Out of line here every Sunday morning, 8 to 9, Fox Sports Radio. We'll see you next week. Thank everyone for joining the show today. Bye-bye.